Welcome to a brand spanking new episode of the Football Corner, Muncher's very own home for all things football. My name is Vikram.
My name is Shreyas.
If you guys are new or old, you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts, Google, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Castbox, and more.
And don't forget to follow us on all social media. That's at Muncher Podcasts.
So we have a pretty interesting episode lined up. We're going to be breaking down the FA Cup semi-final games, talking about our picks of the player of the week and the team of the week, and lots more to follow. So let's just get started, Shreyas, and unpack everything that we want to discuss. Why don't we jump into the FA Cup semi-finals? And before we talk about absolutely anything, hearty congratulations to you and Chelsea for making it through to the finals of the FA Cup.
Also, some transfers.
Huh?
I mean, congratulations can be combined with some kick-ass transfer business as well.
We don't talk about speculation on this podcast. We only talk about hard news. So when that does happen, I will be the first to congratulate you. But as of right now, I know who you're talking about. There's no Kai Havertz in your team, so shut up and let's talk about the games, all right? And just take my congratulations in the positive spirit it's meant for. But before that, I want to talk about the Arsenal City game first. So let's just deep dive there. Totally unexpected result. City's been so weird, especially during the restart. I think the first three or four games I saw them, once it restarted, they were at such a higher level than their opponents. And this is, we're talking about EPL teams, so top of the top, right? I actually thought that they... and I kind of still do. I think there's good contenders to come through and win it all in this knockout-style Champions League format that we have. But taking that thinking into account and then looking at the game they had against Arsenal, it was completely like a polar opposite reaction that they had. What do you think of the game?
I mean, look, without taking much away from Arteta, I think he's doing a great job. At Arsenal, I think it's so ironic that he was that Guardiola was his mentor, and he kind of like his team outplayed Guardiola City, and that was beautiful to see. It was Aubameyang, he was doing his thing. The kids are doing their things, and you really start to see Arteta's effect, you know, on this team. And maybe it's a little too late for this season, but. I think it was insane, you know, the way it happened. They haven't had the best lockdown restart. They lost to City in that first game after restarting. So kudos to the manager, kudos to the players. Stuff is brewing at Arsenal, and yeah, City can go down for all I care, because yeah, we all know where this is going. So, but I'm gonna keep it to the game for now, and I am so freaking glad that they didn't make it to the final, because they have a good chance of making it all the way at the Champions League, and that's scary.
I think City was kind of relying on David Luiz effing up like he usually does, and he actually ended up having a fantastic game. He was tight, he was clearing balls, he actually saved, I think, one or two shots that were pretty much going in goal, and he had such a good game, completely redeemed himself, and in the eyes of Arsenal fans and Arteta, and like I'm assuming the management hierarchy as well. But compared to the City game, the league game that he'd had not that long ago, it's such a contrasting performance, and I think that had a lot to do with Arsenal coming through. They were pretty solid when it came to like their defense. They're very tight, and you need to play a defensive game like that to be able to overturn City, because City always has like a million shots on target and stuff like that, and they limited it to, I think, this Mahrez shot attempt, I think, which was in the second half, was the first official on-target shot for City, which is very surprising, because they actually come close a lot. They actually don't end up converting everything. So proper full kudos to Arsenal's defense. And I think that was a big reason why they ended up coming through.
Yeah, I mean, talking about David Luiz, I think what Arteta has figured out is that he plays really well in the center of a back three. And also Kieran Tierney, this kid from Celtic, who they signed from Celtic, he's stepping up as well, living up to the hype finally. And that ball for Aubameyang's second goal, even Aubameyang's first goal, it was a masterclass in, it was like a taste of City's medicine being done to City, which was freaking awesome. They played out from the back. They kept the ball moving, you know, got it out to the right side, nice and easy and smooth. And a beautiful ball by Pepe, far post, fantastic finish by Aubameyang. Yeah, it'll be insane if that guy extends his contract and stays at Arsenal. Then we're all talking about Chelsea and United stepping up, spending money, challenging, you know, for second and third probably next season. I think Arsenal will be, or rather Arteta's Arsenal will be next season's dark horse.
I think so too. They've shown a lot of promise, and they did show a lot of promise even when he came on board, but it was very up and down, so you couldn't really gauge his effect or his tactics and how positive they were. So great news for Arsenal, I think, comes at the right time for them, sort of reinforces Arteta and this project and the long-term sort of benefits of it.
After beating Liverpool, that is.
Exactly. And a bad week for City. Ended up getting chucked out. They can't, basis of last season and those four domestic titles that they had, and like being shooed out of the semis, where I think they were clear favorites going into the game. Pretty bad, but followed by some good news, mostly for City and City fans and citizens, as they like to call themselves. Their Champions League ban got overturned. Which was immediately followed by a lot of harsh reactions, mostly from and including Premier League managers as well. Jose at the forefront of all of it seems to think that this is the first step in the demise of the FFP. And I can't say that I disagree with him. So it was a pretty startling sort of overturn there. I know your favorite team, Chelsea, also went through something similar, but they did end up getting banned, and the extent of their ban got overturned. But here, City, even before the ban was enforced, which was supposed to be for 2 years, just completely gets overturned. So kind of on in-your-face, blatant sort of disregard for the reason why FFP got implemented. Maybe they figured out some legal loopholes, and that's how this stuff works at the end of the day. It's just a team of lawyers looking at the law and figuring out where the loopholes are. And if you do something within those loopholes, however immoral it might be, it's still legal. And I'm assuming that's essentially what's happened here. But it's literally taken FFP, the concept of FFP, the whole point of it, and thrown it in the bin.
Pretty much. I mean, which is why I'd like to change what you said, that City did not have a shitty week. Who cares if they didn't make it to a domestic cup final? They're still in the Champions League. They probably might just end up, you know, if not winning it, at least definitely one of the contenders. But this whole FFB, what I'm going to call it, debacle of, they've literally happily thrown up all that gibberish and garbage of what's allowed and what's not allowed and whatever potential, you know, punishments or sanctions. It's literally money talks. And on one side, when you have this going on the other side, you have Newcastle's takeover going to happen like imminently, as far as we know. So it's honestly scary. And I remember I had read a very massive, lengthy tweet in the form of a thread. And this guy was explaining every single thing that this Court of Arbitration of Sport, which is the be all end all, like the Supreme Court of cases in sport, their word is final. So the fact that it's even taken up at that level is serious enough. Chelsea's case was taken there. Barcelona has had transfer bans where they then appealed to CAS, saying that since we have a ban for, you know, the upcoming windows, can we move one window ahead and give us this one window so that we can compensate for those banned, you know, duration. And that's bullshit. That's when they bought Suarez and Coutinho and probably a bunch of other freaking people. And that just doesn't make sense. Like, they were allowed to, in effect, counter the godforsaken sanction. So it's just becoming worse and worse and worse. And this is just literally puking out and disrespecting the very concept of FFP. And we know that there's been corruption at UEFA level, at FIFA level. And the fact that it's trickling down now to now how clubs are run, especially in the pinnacle of football with Europe and the top five leagues and all of that stuff. It is extremely sad. And, I think it shows with, we were talking off mic about how, you know, Guardiola, you know, yes, he's arrogant. Yes, he's earned that arrogance to a certain extent, but the extent he's going to defend this whole, you know, decision and upturn of this sanction is, honestly, it's a little obnoxious. And he's way beyond, you know, his designation or his role at the club or a representative of that club to say the things he's saying in the tone that he's saying them in.
Yeah, I agree. I think he should be, I mean, it's completely understandable to defend your club and your project and it makes sense. But the level at which he's going to and then kind of lashing out at other clubs and other managers and stuff like that, I think that's a little too much. It's like I said, dude, it's all about legal loopholes. I'm sure everything that they've done has been proved to be legal. It's just, it's not in the right taste. They're taking advantage of the legalities of the system very blatantly at this point. So that's a pretty bad side. And I agree with Guardiola. I think, I feel like stuff like this kind of sticks with you throughout your career. So once Guardiola leaves City, which obviously he's going to leave City, it's not like he's a one club man or anything like that. I think stuff like this is going to stick. So understandable, again, to defend your club and defend your players and your management and your position and all of that. But, I mean, be a little more tactical about it, right? So, yeah, I love how it's veered towards the City ban immediately from talking about Arsenal winning the FA Cup semis. So I don't want to take the spotlight away from them at all.
Oh, and, if I'm not taking the spotlight away from Arsenal, can we just round that off by saying, by beating Liverpool and City, then losing to Aston Villa without getting a single shot on target, and also the goal.
Tired, dude. Arsenal, so many games.
Yeah, Arsenal have really out-Arsenal themselves this week.
I mean, I love it. They got the wins when it mattered, and fine. I mean, it's okay. Completely fine. And it's understandable, dude. These guys are playing like a game every 2-3 days, so you have to be tired. You still, no matter how many water breaks you get, no matter how many subs you get, it's still a tough situation to be in. And because we were talking about Guardiola, I want to take a quick minute to acknowledge something that I'm extremely, extremely happy about. And I know you were happy about as well. Guardiola is a big fan of this guy, and so are you and I. And we're super excited to see Marcelo Bielsa and Leeds United in the EPL finally. The godfather of modern football is a slight exaggeration, but I will stick with it because a lot of these players, especially coming out of South America, and a lot of these managers, including Guardiola, including someone like a Pochettino or someone, massive fans of this guy. They've taken a lot from him in terms of how clubs are managed, how football should be played, and the philosophy of football. So we're finally going to see the OG of all of that in terms of how football should be played tactically and sometimes off the field as well. And we've finally going to see him in the EPL next season. I'm super stoked about that. I hope he gets the right backing from his club to buy the right amount of players, because you need a good team. I think the team he has is solid, but it's not good enough to compete in the EPL. So even if they want to get to like a mid-table level or something, he needs those transfers in. But I'm finally super glad to see. And I'm very happy because a lot of, you know, newer fans of football, or fans of football who maybe are casual and only watch the English Premier League, I'm really glad that they're going to see someone like a Marcelo Bielsa and his tactics in play as well. They're not going to be something that's new for them. They're not going to be revolutionary, because he's been doing it for a while. And newer, more successful coaches like Poch and Guardiola and stuff have taken from his football. So you see the DNA of his style of football being played in the EPL today. But to see someone whose original thought it was and being translated on the field, I'm pretty stoked, man.
Yeah, I mean, just to summarize it, he's almost like a silent Jose Mourinho. He is a badass. He will press the wrong buttons and the right buttons, whether it's his own team or spying on other teams, quote unquote. I'm just willing to see that side of it. And that, coupled with what we love and know about Leeds as a city, as a club, as their history, their ups and downs, that's honestly, it's a little scary. And I think he's going to chew, you know, managers like Lampard and Arteta for breakfast, lunch and dinner, while he, at least at a stature level, is potentially can enjoy the fame and you know, fortune of managers like Klopp and Pep have, you know, over these last few years.
I think so too, man. I think so too. I think we can totally picture Guardiola going and touching his feet after every game he plays against Leeds.
It can be like Peripona,
Maharaj. But yeah, I mean, again, just to wrap up, nothing much to sort of deep dive into. I'm waiting to hear some sort of transfer news and speculation that Leeds are being attached to players. So yeah, just on that, super glad that Bielsa is going to be there. For anyone who's not familiar with him or Leeds, I would strongly recommend you should watch Take Us Home, the Leeds United docu-series on Amazon. Gives you a great insight, if not into that club and that city and the way it's run with its new owners, but gives you a great insight into Bielsa and how he approaches his games, how he approaches his team. And a great indicator of the sort of person Bielsa is. He says zero lines. He gives zero interviews in that show. You just watch him from afar. You watch him sometimes giving a press conference or talking to his team, but he never talks to the camera. But you know so much about him after that show ends. So okay. I would strongly recommend it.
Right. So silent Jose Mourinho is accurate, right?
I don't know, man. Let's talk about Jose later. I have some thoughts and it'll take an entire episode just because of how much I love him and how much I'm not loving him right now. That's just very conflicted in my mind. So let's reserve that for later.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's jump to the second game, which I'm sure you're super excited to talk about. The other side of Manchester, the lesser known, currently lesser known red side played Chelsea. And yes, again, a great, great game. Was not expecting it to be so feisty and so dominant, man. I think United was going into this game with a lot of confidence. And the result was, again, completely opposite of what I expected it to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's so weird. It's almost unfair that everyone's blaming De Gea for his howlers. But Chelsea pretty much...
howlers, dude. The first goal, I mean, fine. The first goal, it was close. It was too close to De Gea.
That second goal with the match at 1-0, first half done. Consider a second goal like that, you've just destroyed your team the opportunity to compete.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it literally sucks the morale out immediately. Yeah. And you need like 11 players with great temperament to be able to come back from something like that. So
exactly.
A lot. And, you know, this is a big con of having like a younger, very inexperienced side. Like this is stuff that's going to help them learn. So these are all learning phases, but at a crucial point, at a crucial juncture like this, to have a collective age, which is so young and inexperienced, this is where that inexperience kind of comes through. So I think that hurt United, and that could have just as easily been reversed. I mean, if United would have been in this position, then Chelsea would have been in the unfortunate spot of having a squad which is inexperienced and stuff like that. So I just think, I mean, that, and then, you know, the own goal from Maguire, I think that kind of summed it up. So even though Bruno ended up scoring a penalty in the 85th minute or so, I don't think it mattered too much at all. Chelsea had already won the game.
Right. I mean, yeah, I just saw from the previous game, so much of intensity. Aspi is just leading from the front. That guy, literally, like, you cut him and he'll probably bleed blue. I'm just so happy that, you know, there's one senior guy who's trying to do his stuff. Williams had a fan. I think he's been the best Chelsea player post-lockdown.
I agree.
So yeah,
I think he's been the best Chelsea player in general, even before the lockdown. I remember, especially during the early parts of the season, Willian and Pedro were doing the heavy lifting for Chelsea and getting the job done. So Willian's super reliable, man. He has been for a while. I understand that Chelsea's getting a lot of new blood and new wingers and all of that competition for places. But over the past 5 or 6 seasons, you can see that whenever everything is failing, you put Willian on and at least he stabilizes the situation to a certain extent. So I have a lot of respect for that player. And I think Chelsea should be doing whatever they can possibly to keep him on board. I know he wants a slightly longer contract in terms of years because he understands that his age is, he's at a point where he can't get too many like contracts. So I think that's the dispute that they're having in terms of Chelsea might be wanting to offer him a slightly shorter contract. But I think whatever can be done, obviously within the realms of possibilities, I think Chelsea should hold on to William as much as possible.
I mean, yeah, it's weird, and also I'd like to correct that Chelsea will not be adding new blood. Chelsea has already added a lot of blood and we're still not satisfied. We're still like vampires and our appetite's not satiated. So more will be coming there, you're right. But as far as William's concerned, so the specific case is that Chelsea has this over 30-year-old contract extensions, and that is limited to 1 year, 1 year only. David Luiz did it, Gary Cahill did it, you know, Lampard, Terry, etc. Exactly, all those players. With Willian, currently at age 31 and a half, I believe he'll be turning 32 soon. We've offered him a 2 year extension and he said no, he wants 3. So maybe he's asking for too much, and no one can deny just exactly what he said, especially when Chelsea is down and out. There will be this one guy doing at least the bare minimum of, you know, putting an assist, getting that free kick, you know, at least getting Chelsea on the map, on the scoreboard as an assist or whatever. But at the same time, look, he earns a bucket load in wages. I know Pedro's leaving and there's some Roma stuff going on there. But yeah, I mean, to get him off the wage bill will be huge. So if he stays, great. If he doesn't, still great. You know, there will be other senior players. In fact, a senior player that I want to talk about is Giroud, and we'll get to him and, you know, how his impact has been. But yeah, it's not the end of the world if he doesn't sort of come down on his demand of this inexorbitant fucking 3 years.
I mean, yeah, I think it's more a negotiation tactic than anything else, but I hope something works out there. I mean, for the sake of Chelsea, because losing someone like Willian, not flashy, not always in the goal scoring charts or whatever, but direct forward movement and very, very effective. I think that's more important than anything else that I mentioned earlier. So hopefully that works out. You spoke about Giroud, man. What a week this guy's having.
I mean,
what a week. And literally, like, what, even during beginning of the restart and obviously during the entire season that we saw before that, completely in the back, Tammy Abraham preferred, Batshuayi preferred, and Lampard's come out multiple times, even during the season, during the lockdown, after lockdown, that you cannot deny the professionalism of this guy. Is always training, head down. The humility levels are so very, very positive. And crunch time, and it's showing. A goal against Norwich before the semi-final, and a goal, the opening goal against United as well. He is, Shreyas, you'd be pretty happy to know he's my player of the week. Olivier Giroud.
Interesting. I love that choice. Look, I know exactly where that's coming from, because look, he signed for the wrong color in London, and better late than never, finally realized that that's not for him, and made his way to SW6, Stamford Bridge. And look, the guy, just the way he hold up play and to have these 1-2s with someone who's like one, you know, less than half his or half his height, you know, with Hazard, which doesn't make sense on paper. Like, this huge guy, like a tractor, you know, who can jump and be strong, is playing freaking 1-2s with, you know, the wizard of Chelsea at that time. And he's doing the exact same thing now. I remember, you know, with Lampard coming in with the transfer ban and then the overturn in Jan, he was almost on his way out. Chelsea weren't sure if they could extend, you know, his contract. Like you said, he was, you know, behind the pecking order of Tammy first and then Batshuayi later. So he was third choice. Conte wanted him. Conte wanted him at Inter, and we know how well these sort of players in their fag end of their careers past their peak can do so well in a country like, you know, Italy in the Serie A with how football is played.
I think specifically with the Conte, he wanted to use or he had a lot of use for what Giroud's brilliant at. So the stuff you mentioned, hold up play and stuff like that, right? I think he would have loved that in the Inter that they have set up right now. So I think that's a big reason. But you know what? I think case in point of the effectiveness and the brilliance of Giroud is the World Cup. Played every game, scored 0 goals, but was so effective on the pitch. And that sort of system kind of didn't work without him there, sort of facilitating everything and the movement of the ball in that final third. So that he's obviously always done. I think that's always translated well, especially these Chelsea years. I think he's been maligned a bit too much, and that's mostly because of the lack of goal scoring. So this past week, scoring 2 goals, opening goal in your FA Cup semi-final against United as well. I mean, it was an easy pick for me.
I mean, yeah, I'm with you 100%, but
Who's your pick, by the way?
Yeah, we spoke about a certain Jose Mourinho. We spoke about, or we have to, about, you know, how he's not, like he's a little stuck up, and how that's affected, you know, the rest of his team and his squad this season, and a certain translator to Harry Kane. Yeah, this guy just seemed down and out. Didn't know, you know, if he's going to step up. He had a weird, you know, start of the season. And then with this change in manager, we didn't know what was going on. And for him to step up and just shut up all of his criticizers with not just one, but two braces back to back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, okay, sure. The game against Newcastle, his first goal, you know, settled it. It was Son opening the scoring, Matt Ritchie equalized. And then, you know, he gets, you know, the lead, you know, 4 or 5 minutes later, and then scores his second goal, you know, pretty much at the death. Mm-hmm. But the game against Leicester, like these guys, we know Leicester has probably had the worst restart of all 20 teams, possibly. But these guys destroyed Leicester in the first half. 3-0, Harry Kane scores within both his goals in 3 minutes. Lucas Moura with both the assists. You know, if Jose Mourinho needed any help, you know, bullshitting or throwing his weight around, I think he has Harry Kane to thank for that this week. And he makes it to my player of the week.
I totally see that, dude. 4 goals and 4 very important goals, and coming at a time when, like you said, this Tottenham's team is sort of not looking like it's doing too well.
Right.
Also, like one thing that, you know, gets swept under the rug is Harry Kane's work rate, man. Even when Tottenham's losing, or Harry Kane's not on the score sheet, or he's not having too many touches on the ball, he's always working hard on the pitch. And I'm just really glad to see that it translated to these 4 goals and shut up a lot of his critics as well. And then obviously Jose being Jose in his typical fashion, wanting to say something positive, comes out sounding like something extremely negative and egotistical and narcissistic. He's like, oh, Kane can't, I don't even know what he said, but essentially it sounded like he said that Kane is valued at Tottenham and he won't be valued like at any other club, which is complete shit. Any club would want Kane. Whoever's in for an out and out striker would love to have Kane and stuff. So I really like that pick. I was thinking about Kane as my pick as well. But I think just the fact that those Tottenham games are, they do matter in that placements on the table and stuff like that. But this Giroud, especially his goal against United, and that translating to an FA Cup semi-final win, I think. And just the whole story behind Giroud and you know, where he was at the beginning of the season, where he was even at the beginning of the restart, and where he is now, and how he's like, clearly the preferred starting striker for Chelsea team. I think that has been a great week for him. So he's my player of the week. Why don't we jump to our team of the week? And I'll go first, man. I have something that's kind of left field. And this has nothing to do with my bias for Serie A. I have absolutely no bias for Serie A. I only have a bias for Juventus. So it has nothing to do with it. But I think my team of the week would be Atlanta, man. They had a pretty, pretty interesting week. And they've been on a bloody tear all through the season and post restart as well. Now, although they have a game in hand, they're actually sitting second in the table, which is absurd to think about, because before the restart you would have thought that it would either be Lazio or Inter or someone. But I think you mentioned that Leicester has probably had the worst restart. I think Lazio has had the worst restart from second. Wow. I think they're now on the fourth. Yeah, they're on fourth, 3 points behind Inter. So it's a pretty sad situation for them. But Atlanta had a great, great week, man. They had a game, I think, starting of this week. Well, just end of last week, they played Juventus and they drew 2-2 against them, which is a great result for them. Then they played Brescia, destroyed them 6-2.
Wow. Brescia that has Sandro Tonali.
Brescia has Sandro Tonali. Brescia is bottom table. They're the I think, Norwich of...
they've already been relegated?
No, but they will be, I guess.
Okay.
Or might already be mathematically relegated. Might be wrong here.
Okay.
And then they ended up playing a game against Verona just a couple of days later, which, you know, you can assume tired legs and all. So they drew that 1-1. And then they had a game yesterday against Bologna. Very ill-tempered, typical bad sportsmanship, Italian-type level league game. Which is sometimes a lot of fun to see. I think Gasperini, their coach, ended up getting thrown out. But they ended up winning 1-0 there as well. And because of which, although they have a game in hand, they're 2 points above Inter at 74 points. And sitting second in the table. So massive, massive kudos to this team, man. They've been playing so well for the past 2 years. And to have a week like the week they've had and get to that point, because if Inter end up dropping points, then that solidifies their position in that top two. So I would be super excited to see them finish second in the Serie A. So yeah, that's my team of the week, Atlanta.
Interesting. I mean, I know enough about Atlanta, Chelsea, just sold a player who was on loan, who's doing really well there, Mario Pasalic. Chelsea are also interested in their left back or left wide back, Robin Gosens. So they're definitely, they've been doing the right stuff. Love how they play. Love that, they have this Italian sort of, Renaissance sort of style of, how they just like came out of nowhere, destroying clubs in the Champions League, destroying clubs, in the domestic league as well. And definitely a team to look out for and worthy winners for sure. I think for me, just how things have turned out, in another country, Spain specifically, with not just Barcelona's demise, but again, one of the teams to come out super strong from this lockdown with, Zidane saying, oh my God, I can't believe how fit Hazard's become in training, and poor guy got injured again. But freaking Karim Benzema, freaking Real Madrid, freaking winning or rather stealing the league. They're on an onslaught like God knows how. And the sad part is they're not even settled. They still have senior players to replace. Zidane's still at odds with, the board that, assigned him his second, role at this club. So it's so weird the way the Spanish league works. But yeah, specifically Real, they've just had a monumental July thus far, especially this last week.
I agree, dude. Actually, Real's had one of the strongest starts. And the fact that the two teams that we think, I mean, City, I don't think anymore because of their up and down that they've had. But right. I think when the time comes, they'll be ready. The fact that these two teams are playing, they still have one leg to play in City, and Real needs to overturn that and get through to them. I think that's going to be a very, very interesting game to watch.
Absolutely.
And a great precursor to that Euro World Cup style Champions League tournament that we have. But again, congratulations to Real, man. It's hard to say whether it Barcelona lost the title, but Real won. I would actually think Real won just because of the stellar restart that they've had. They've been on point. Sergio Ramos has been leading from the front with his head and his legs in the penalty box and stuff. And, to see players like Asensio back and in the scoring sheet, and Benzema just like a metronome, regularly just clocking those goals in. He has always been overshadowed by Higuain and Ronaldo and all of these guys, and Bale for a season and a half at Real. He's always been there. He's always been scoring. And it's clear to see, because I think now he's maybe the second highest goal scorer for Real Madrid. And he's going to be remembered as a legend. So he was actually pretty close for one of my players of the week as well. But I think just Real doing what they did with the restart and winning the title, I think it's a pretty, pretty good story that they've done. And Zizou is like their, I don't even know, he's like their lucky charm. He comes in, gets trophies immediately, doesn't really change up the team that much. And I don't know how he does it. So it's pretty cool. Pretty in fact, I think if the Ballon d'Or hadn't gotten cancelled and would have actually happened, I think Benzema would have had a good shot for that top three.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's weird why they freaking cancelled on it. I mean, it doesn't make sense. What they're saying is that the circumstances under which football has resumed is not enough for us to analyze or vote or whatever you want to call it, or unfair to come up with a winner. And that just doesn't make sense. It's almost like, oh, wait, maybe if Messi, Ronaldo aren't going to win it, then should we just cancel it? Which doesn't make sense because Messi's had a killer season as well. But I
think Messi would have taken it if it would have happened.
He's been a beast. But the Ballon d'Ors have always mirrored club and country success, right? Like, look at Modric and look at, other players besides Ronaldo and Messi who've won it. Talking about Benzema and Lewandowski as well, these guys age like a fine wine. The older they get, the better they get somehow. If either of them wouldn't have won, they definitely would. Both of them would have been in the top three for sure. Benzema is just, he's just, yeah, he's scary. And here's the weirdo part. Here's the irony. The guy doesn't play for France.
That is something that I don't even know, man. That scandal was weird AF. And the fact, I mean, firstly, he got ostracized by I feel like Laurent Blanc was the coach at that time. Or was it still Deschamps? I don't know. But first by the coach.
Yeah, the controversy with Valbuena was during Laurent Blanc's time, I think.
So first he got ostracized by Blanc and the squad and stuff. And then the entire French Football Association, like this weird, unsaid lifetime ban that he has. I don't get it. But given the last World Cup, I think France is doing fine. And Armand Giroud kind of held up that spot pretty well. And Deschamps sort of figured out how to make him play in that team. I think that worked. You mentioned Lewandowski, dude. I mean, you know, I'm a big fan. I can't stop talking about him. And the fact that he's at this age, but the level he played at this season, finally getting so close to that Gerd Müller record of overall goals in a German season, at this point of time in his career, just goes to show how well he played. And Messi, man, I mean, who can say enough about him? I don't understand the reason for the Ballon d'Or cancellation. They also said that, oh, you know, Euro 2020 was supposed to happen this year, and that plays into the consideration as well. But it's not cancelled, it's happening next year. So you can like take into account like all of that stuff. So I don't get it. It's just, you know, what's contrary is that if you say something like a Ballon d'Or should be cancelled because the season didn't happen and this and that, then by that logic, it's, you're trying to say that, okay, Liverpool should not be the winners, or Real shouldn't be the title holders. I mean, I don't know what it is. I think personally, stupid opinion, and I just want to say it because I kind of think it's funny. I think it's like French propaganda, man. Like French season got cancelled, league got cancelled, and they're all like, oh,
Mbappe won't win.
Mbappe won't win or whatever it is. And they're like, oh, France, no football, no Ballon d'Or. I don't even know, bro. I don't get it. It makes absolutely no sense. We've had all of the games that we're supposed to have for the regular season. We're literally going to accommodate for a Europe season. French league is the only top league that kind of got cancelled. And I don't think they had any players who would even figure in the top five for the Ballon d'Or. So I'm not too sure I agree with the reasons there. And it kind of sucks because this is the first time in the history of the Ballon d'Or that it's not going to be given out. And Messi is essentially going to hold the award till next year now, which is weird. So I don't know. I think they still should have done it. I think if competitions are happening and results are being given and medals are being given out and stuff like that, I don't think Ballon d'Or is something that should be cancelled. Makes no sense to me.
Exactly. And just a quick special mention, one of Madrid's matches that we were talking about, making it to my team of the week. On the weekend of or this day, the nine matches that took place on Friday the 17th, seven matches, either both teams or one team got a player sent off. But that's besides the point. Let's talk about Madrid and their match against Villarreal. A certain Santi Cazorla played his last match for Villarreal and got a beautiful send-off. And after his weird black phase, if we can call it that, at Arsenal with the injuries and the skin grafts and doctors telling him he may not be able to play, let alone play professionally, to come back to Villarreal.
He didn't play for like, what, a year and a half or something? Or 2 years, maybe?
Correct. And he comes back and he scores like 10 goals, 11 assists, which is insane.
And now third spell at Villarreal. That's huge.
Correct. And he is now joining Xavi in Qatar at Al-Sadd. Right.
And also the fact that he helped propel Villarreal to that fifth position finish. I think that's huge, man. He's going to be a club legend for life.
Right.
100%. And massive respect to him, dude. Right. What he went through as a career, I loved him at his peak at Arsenal, just like a dynamo. And getting shit done, essentially. And to be able to come back and still play at a high level in the La Liga after sitting in the sidelines for so, so long and being told by literally everyone that he's never going to play again. What a story, dude. I mean, and what a storied career. What a legend. And happy to see him sort of go to Qatar, earn a boatload of money. He deserves it. And then, I mean, I can totally... He's one of those players, that high IQ players, that you can totally see becoming a coach in the future.
Yep.
So yeah, anyways, great end to the episode. That wraps up this week's episode of the Football Corner. Hope you guys enjoyed. And we're going to be coming back with you next week with more updates from the world of football, more picks for Player of the Week, Team of the Week. And let us know if you agree with our picks or if you think other players and or teams should have made the cut for Player and Team of the Week. So we'll catch you then and hope you guys have a good week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye, guys. Love you. Please follow AdMonster Podcast.